Many people believe Dr. O'Malley was shot because he performed abortions. The BC government has introduced laws that it thinks will protect people who do abortions. And we'll hear what Garson Ramallis thinks of the proposed law in just a few minutes. And as well, we'll hear from the BC Civil Liberties Association, who are not so sure that the law is going in the right direction. Now, the weather's going in the right direction. We still have a little bit of persistent low cloud dogging us this morning, but we're going to break open this afternoon into frequent sunny periods, looking for high temperatures of 20, perhaps 23 degrees inland. The exception to this is going to be the north end of the island and the central coast. You're going to have the patchy fog and drizzle and low cloud for a little bit longer than the lower mainland, and might see a sunny break or two later in the day. On the roads, still no probably heard on the news, the BC government has introduced legislation that will restrict protests around abortion clinics and around the homes and offices of people who provide abortions. The government's action comes 7 months after Vancouver obstetrician gynecologist Dr. Garson Ramallis was shot in his home. It's widely believed that Dr. Ramallis was shot because he does abortions. Whoever shot him is still at large. Since the shooting, Dr. Ramallis has kept a fairly low profile, but yesterday he came into the CBC to record his support for the so-called bubble zone legislation.
At 7:10 a.m. on November 8, 1994, my life and the life of my family was changed forever. I was the victim of an attempted assassination. I suffered a gunshot wound to my left thigh, which was almost fatal. Underwent an 8-hour operation to save my life and leg, and spent 10 weeks in the hospital. I and my family will forever bear the physical and emotional scars of this completely unexpected, vicious attack. Although my assailant has not been apprehended, it is almost certain that I was shot because I perform abortions. I have been a doctor since 1962. Practicing medicine, looking after patients, is an integral part of my life and personality. Since my injury, I have been denied the privilege of practicing medicine, and it will be some time before I am sufficiently rehabilitated to resume my life's work. Our home, and particularly the kitchen where I was sitting when shot, is no longer a sanctuary. Some of my blood still remains in the grouting between the floor tiles. Because of the bad memories associated with my attack and near death, we have decided to sell our house and move to another location. This will likely add significant financial ramifications to an already insecure future. My wife is very worried about my security. For example, she has suggested that I wear a bulletproof vest when I return to work. Our home has been picketed 4 or 5 times, as has my medical office on numerous occasions. Our medical office was the subject of telephone harassment or hang-ups. On one occasion, nails were thrown into our driveway, resulting in multiple tire punctures. The murder attempt on me has also affected my colleagues. In the Vancouver area alone, I am aware of one doctor who quit performing abortions and one who was planning to start but changed her mind after my assault. In addition, new graduates of the obstetrics and gynecology program at the University of British Columbia are having second thoughts about providing abortion services. I have always had a strong commitment to the principle of free speech. The saying, "Your right to swing your arm ends where my nose begins," has real application in this situation. Before I was shot, I was of the opinion that, much as I disliked their picketing my home with offensive posters, anti-abortionists had the right of free speech and were entitled to picket my home, office, and medical facilities as long as they did not trespass. Since my shooting, I have had time to reflect on these matters. Now, when I read anti-abortion rhetoric, I see a veiled threat. Sometimes the rhetoric is clearly inciting to violence. Much of the media coverage of my assault reported the views of violent anti-abortionists who were pleased that I had been shot and publicly stated that I got what I deserved. It is becoming clear that anti-abortion rhetoric condones, promotes, and can incite to violence. With the escalating violence and real risk to abortion providers and patients, these people can no longer be regarded only as a nuisance. I am living proof that these actions are dangerous. I believe that I have the right to privacy and quiet enjoyment of my home. I believe that my patients should be allowed to seek medical attention, including pregnancy termination, without having to run a gauntlet of demonstrators, particularly when there is a real risk of violence. I believe it is cruel and an invasion of privacy to harass patients seeking pregnancy termination. I believe that my patients' rights take precedence over the anti-abortionists' right of free speech on my doorstep or in front of abortion facilities. If anti-abortionists want to make their views known, there are ample opportunities to do so through conventional media techniques. If they choose to demonstrate, they can do so on the steps of the legislature or the law courts. I am evidence that real danger exists. I survived. The next victim may not. Doctors and their patients should not have to suffer intimidation and violence. I believe the proposed access zone legislation will provide much needed protection for abortion providers and their patients. This is a humanitarian issue which crosses party lines. I urge all members of the BC legislature to support this bill. This is Dr. Garson Romalis speaking from Vancouver, British Columbia.
That was Dr. Garson Romalis. He's an obstetrician gynecologist, and that was his view on the new legislation. We would like to hear what you think about the new legislation. You can give our answering machine a call at 662-6976. The BC Civil Liberties Association is not convinced that creating bubble zones is a good idea. John Westwood is the executive director of the BC Civil Liberties Association. Good morning.
Good morning, Hal.
Can you tell me what your objections or problems are with the new legislation?
Let me first say, though, Hal, that I agree with almost everything that Dr. O'Malley said. I think that women ought to be able to access abortion services without fear of intimidation and harassment. I think that the idea that a person's home is not sacrosanct anymore is very problematic. Our concern is not with with the parts of the, or at least with the activities in the zone that are prohibited, which include harassments or threat or intimidation. We support those and as I said, think that women have a right to access, and service providers have a right to go about their business without being subjected to that. Our concern is that the legislation goes too far in prohibiting peaceful picketing, the handing out of leaflets, someone's having a sign in their hand saying that they think that abortion is wrong. We're not convinced that that is necessary in order to give the kind of protection that Dr. O'Malley was concerned about.
But isn't it the case that possibly peaceful protests can very easily become harassment? On a second's notice, on a moment's notice, and that this could be going on a frequent basis.
Yes, it is possible, and in fact, spokespersons for the Every Woman's Health Clinic have told us that in fact that's what happens, and they've been, I think, very concerned that the police have not been strong enough, if you like, in enforcing the injunction, which they now now have. I mean, every woman's health clinic now has an injunction which prohibits a lot of the activity that Dr. Amalis was concerned about and that the BC Civil Liberties is concerned about. But if lack of enforcement is the problem, then it seemed to us that more enforcement of the current injunction would be the answer, and let's at least take a look and see if that would work. I mean, if this government is so convinced and has such a strong will to make abortion services available to women and also to protect service providers, then why aren't there two or three cops out there every day that the clinic is open in order to ensure that the injunction is being upheld?
You're talking about 15 hours a day?
Sure, why not?
Is expense a question here? I mean, this you're talking about putting homes, perhaps, facilities, hospitals under 12 hours a day police protection for something that is legal in this province.
There's only one freestanding abortion clinic in the province, and most of the problems have happened at that one clinic. I mean, there are peaceful protests around hospitals, and it's not my understanding that there's any big problem about those. We'll have to wait and see whether the government is going to actually create a bubble zone around hospitals. The legislation doesn't do so. It gives the cabinet, in effect, the power to do so. I guess the point is that if this provincial government says that this is a big issue for them, and if it's a big issue for them, and if they've already got an injunction, then I suggest to them that they put their money where their mouth is and fund the Vancouver Police Department, if that's where the problem is, to put some officers around there and maintain the current injunction. I think that what they've taken is the easier way, and I can understand that. We've got an issue of a constitutionally protected right of freedom of speech here, and I think that the least invasive way needs to be tried. I think that there hasn't been, up to this point, a sincere effort to enforce that injunction, and why not try that first and see if it works?
I also gather that your association has some questions about the secrecy involved in some aspects of the legislation. Could you explain what that is?
Yeah, just very briefly. It's what the legislation does is automatically create buffer zones around doctors' offices and homes, but allows cabinet the power to create them around facilities, which includes clinics and hospitals. But there's the process of collecting the evidence that a bubble zone is needed, and the process of deciding how big a bubble zone to create, that is to say whether the remedy is going to be tailored to the kind of harm that's been demonstrated, is itself not open for anyone to scrutinize. And that's one of the beauties of injunctions, is that every person can go into court and listen to the evidence and decide for themselves whether the restriction on freedom of speech is tailored to the particular harms that have been demonstrated in the case.
An injunction has to be, to get one, you have to demonstrate
that
it's necessary.
And there's no necessity to demonstrate harm here. The cabinet can simply make the decision that the law authorizes them to do so, and there's no evidence of harm required, and the process itself is opaque to citizens.
You've made these objections or your concerns known to the provincial government?
Yes, we have.
And they may come up in the debate in the legislature, I presume.
Well, we'll have to see. I think the government has a fairly strong commitment to this legislation, and I think the legislation is receiving very wide support around the province. Our job is to point out, because we're a civil liberties association, that there is a freedom of speech issue here, and that the method least invasive of that right needs to be looked at carefully, and we've got to say so.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Hal.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
John Westwood is the executive director of the BC Civil Liberties Association. We're coming up to 4 minutes before 7 o'clock.